Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, my name's Sean Whetstone, and I'm representing West Ham this evening. You can find me on Twitter at West Ham Football.
Hello, my name is Thomas Nygren, and I represent Liverpool on this pod today, and you can find me on www.lfcsv.se.
Hello, I'm Jake. I'm the Newcastle fan for this podcast. You get me on Twitter at JakeJackWith2Ns, and I write for EPL Index and The Boot Room.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining us, guys. Up first, we're going to talk about some recent happenings in the Premier League and just get your takes on them. We'll start off with the Arsenal loss yesterday. Obviously, 1-0 up, figured they were just going to win, end up conceding two, losing that match to Watford. In the wake of that, a lot of people, including Troy Deeney in a very exposing interview with BT, said that, you know, they don't have the right amount of grit or toughness. I believe he used the phrase cojones when describing what Arsenal's problems were. Do you think that that's a problem for Arsenal right now? And how big a factor do you think things like grit are in football in the Premier League?
Yeah, I mean, you have to see the game out. And we know that only too well from you know, yesterday. You know, we went down to 10 men and we showed a lot of grit and determination in holding on with 10 men to our 1-0 lead. And, you know, we held on to the 85th minute when we conceded a goal. And that's a common trait of West Ham. If I was to have a criticism, you know, we can't see a game out. We did the same with Southampton earlier on. You know, and I can't remember this. We either drew or we lost 3-2, and we conceded in the 90th minute. And I've just run an article on Clarendon Hugh, which is a West Ham news site I write for, and I've looked back at the whole of 2017 and found exactly that. We've lost 10 points in the Premier League by conceding a goal in the last 10 minutes. So, yeah, tenacity, grit. You've got to keep your game and your discipline right to the dying seconds. The amount of points that are lost by losing concentration in the last 5 minutes. It's a game of inches. On my other podcast, I talk about the game of inches. And just one small mistake either way can be a travesty for a make or break a season, really.
Yeah, Thomas, obviously Liverpool's defense has caught a lot of flack this season, despite the 0-0 yesterday against Manchester United. Do you think that's something that's missing from Liverpool?
Yeah, I don't know if grit is the right word for both Arsenal and Liverpool, really, but I think both the teams lack some kind of leadership. Arsenal has had that problem since Vieira left, and we've had that problem since Gerrard's days. So you need to have leaders and fighters on the pitch, and we both lack that, I think. And especially when you can't get the game going, when you have problems winning the midfield, you can't afford to get outmuscled in games like that. So we often have that problem since our midfielders aren't very physically. And I think Arsenal have a bit of the same problem. I didn't see the game yesterday, but when they played against us, they lacked a lot of leadership.
I'm just not buying into this grit and tenacity or whatever you want to call it. It's just such a lazy media narrative for Arsenal. They've got a lot of problems, and I agree to some extent that they could get some players with a little bit more leadership. But, I mean, yesterday they had Mertesacker in the team. He's a proven leader, captain Germany before. Kolasinac, I'd say, is very much a player that fits the mould of all these words we're using to describe what Arsenal need, and they signed him in the summer. He's very sort of hustle bustle. He gives 100%, can get stuck in. And yesterday, Arsenal won 18 tackles to Watford's 15, won 30 aerial duels to Watford's 22. Like they did the qualities that you would associate with these words better than Watford did. So I don't understand why that's a narrative at all. It's just so lazy. And I think if Dan was on the podcast, Arsenal fan Dan, he is absolutely against this narrative. And I think I've been on podcasts with him before where he's just torn into it. And I completely agree. I think Arsenal have got problems. I think their main problems are they're playing a 3-4-2-1 that it doesn't suit the players at all. And Wenger's done it because he's just following trends. He can't coach it. And then last season, they had a bit of luck with it. I don't think they dominated any game that they played with it last season. They got some good results, but they were never convincing and they've just stuck with it. They've not added the players they needed to. Their central midfield needed to be strengthened during the summer. They did do that. I think yesterday it was Elneny and Xhaka. Like, Xhaka's a good player, but he's not... Him and Elneny as a pair doesn't work. Like, they don't know what roles they're carrying out. Like, I couldn't tell you what roles they were carrying out. Were they playmakers, were they box to box? I couldn't tell you because it was just so unclear. There's just massive gaps. Bellerin is doesn't know how to play right wing back, and then you've just got Iwobi and Welbeck. Like they're not good. They're not that good. I just think Arsenal is the sixth best team in the Premier League. That's what they are, and they're that's where they're going to finish. They're not going to finish any higher or any lower. They're just the sixth best team. I don't think there's any big problems. Well, there are big problems, but I don't think they're underperforming. I think Watford are a good team. They just got beaten. Liverpool went to Watford early in the season. They didn't win. They're going to be a good team this year, and I think there's not a lot to write home. But Arsenal should have changed their manager. They should have signed more players. They've got a lot of problems, but grit and determination. They could probably get some better players of leadership. I don't think that's the main problem at all. I think it's just the system, players, quality. I just don't think that good. I just think they're the sixth best team in the Premier League.
A lot of interesting points there, but kind of following Thomas's point, I do also agree with you that they have a lot of leaders on the pitch, including Mertesacker, who I think was club captain before he got hurt. Could there be a lack of leadership from the top down? Because there's a lot of bickering between ownership where they consider selling their shares every other week. It feels like we're seeing a story about Gazidis and Kroenke and everything. Then you have Wenger, who, as you mentioned, is already one foot out the door, so it's hard to really buy into him. Do you think potentially that's where the leadership issue is?
Possibly. I'll tell you what I think is very evident from the first few weeks of the Premier League season. I'll just pick three examples because they're three that come to mind. Sanchez, Van Dijk and Coutinho. They all wanted to leave their clubs, right? And they didn't get their moves. They've all had to stay. Have any of those clubs benefited from it? Southampton, Liverpool and Arsenal are all struggling and they're not fulfilling their potential. I just think if you've got a player that wants to leave, you should sell them. I think that's another problem for Arsenal. They've just got players that... They've just kept players that don't want to be there. There's just a lot wrong. And I agree. It's from the top. I think Wenger, it doesn't have the respect of the dressing room. He doesn't have the respect of the fan base. He probably doesn't even have the respect of the board anymore. I don't really know what he's doing there. He's probably not telling his players to go out and play like this. I'm sure he's got some sort of plan. And from what I've read on Wenger, he's very laissez-faire. He lets his players sort of get on with what they want to do. And I think that's just not the way to manage anymore. Players don't have football brains. They just, I hate to just pick on my own generation, but it's just all just like phones and stuff. They're just not that intelligent. Like I've seen it at Newcastle with Benitez. Like he has programmed our players to practically be robots on the pitch. They just carry out his instructions. We're a much better team because of it. I just think that the game has just left Arsene Wenger behind. Like you can see it with Pep. Like he gives his players so many instructions because they need those instructions to go and carry out and dominate games. Like City under Pellegrini were a lot worse than they are now, and it's taken time under Pep, but now they've got there. They've done it. I just think it all big bogs down to Wenger. I think we could have all predicted this coming with Arsenal. It's not a surprise. They're just not very good.
John, I'd be interested to get your take because you were kind of tipping Arsenal to be big contenders this year.
Was I? I don't remember that far back. Did I really say that? At the beginning of the
you
season? Did.
You said you thought Arsenal were going to be a bit of a...
Oh, yeah, surprise. But that was just to wind you up. More than anything, Spurs fan. Look, it hasn't been. I think people overanalyze these things too much. You know, if it's about Wenger or grit and thing, what happened with Chelsea yesterday? You know, sometimes you just have a bad day at the office and... I don't know. I think we can overanalyze it too much. Wenger, I'm sure he's still got the dressing room, and you know they will learn from it and move on. I just think that the media just goes completely mad and makes up a lot of these problems where they don't exist. And so are they going to win the league? No. If I said at the beginning I was crazy, are Spurs going to
or just winding me up?
Do Man City look like they're going to win? Yes, they do.
Yeah, very, very terrifying. Do Manchester City look? This is not on the running order, but figured we should touch on it again this week. We touched on it on the last full Premier League show on Koeman's job. Looks like they were going to lose. They pull out a late draw. Do we think that Koeman will be their manager by their next match?
Yeah, I think they stick by him. I mean, who else is out there? What else can they do? I mean, they're not going to be relegated, are they? I know they're the 16th position, below West Ham, by the way, in 15th. But, you know, they've got 8 points. I'm sure they will climb up that table a little bit more. Will they be in the top six this year? No. But that's not a reason. You know, people don't stick by managers enough. And there's too much knee jerk. I think they stick by Koeman. And I know the other person equally, is Slaven Bilic will go. And equally, I think they stick by Slaven Bilic. So there you go. The bookies have got, I think, odds on both of these managers going by the end of the season. My prediction is both of them will still be in place by the end of the season and other managers will go.
Interesting.
Probably Hodgson, by the way.
Mm. I think he'll stay as well. They have a lot of new players, so it will take some time for him to get them in. They lost Lukaku, and he was the main man last year. And I think they've had some trouble to getting Sigurdsson and those new guys in the team. And Rooney, well, he's past his prime, so maybe it was the wrong decision to get him to the club. But I think he'll stay. And I think they will end somewhere around 7th or 8th in the end, because they have quite a good team. They are not as good as the top six, but they are too good to be at the bottom. So give him a month and they'll be in the middle.
And just to put it into context, by the way, sorry to butt in, but one win would put them 10th, you know, Kev. So that shows you how tight that middle is of that table at the moment. There's really nothing in it.
I'm going to take on the controversial stance on this podcast, and I think I'm doing for every subject right now, but I just don't think Koeman's very good. I think he's a bit of a fraud. Every job we've been at, he's just been looking higher. Like during the summer, it was his camp that was touting him for Barcelona. Those messages were coming from his camp. They were leaking the message, sort of the stories that he could be in the running. Like he thinks he's a lot better than he is, and he's not a great manager. I think again to reference Dan, I think he's called him the Dutch David Moyes, which isn't even the worst comparison for what Koeman is. He's not very good. The transfers they did over the summer, they've regressed. They signed Michael Keane, Jordan Pickford. You know, and some before Ashley Williams and Gylfie Sigurdsson. Like, if you sign mid-table players, you become a mid-table team, and that's exactly what Everton are going to be. I don't think he's going to last to Christmas. I think he's going to be gone before Christmas because they've got new owners. They're not going to be patient. He's not going to turn this round. he's not. He's going to go. I've seen people linking Ancelotti, which is amazing. Uh-huh. But the Premier League is a major pool, and I can't be going out saying that Everton couldn't get Ancelotti if we got Benitez when we got relegated. So, but yeah, I don't think Koeman's that good. I think he's probably going to get the sack sooner or later.
Interesting. Well, it'll definitely be worth keeping an eye on going forward.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
All right, now into specific club topics. We'll start with you, Sean. Statistically, Aaron Cresswell is having one heck of a season, leads the league in crosses, but West Ham on the whole not creating a lot of chances. Do we think that'll be remedied with the return of Lanzini, or do you think you'll kind of stick with a cross-heavy game for the rest of the season?
Well, I don't know. We're in two minds about Cresswell. It's surprising, that stat that you tell me, because a lot of people are calling for Masuaku, our other left-back, to start ahead of Cresswell. He's not the player he was one or two seasons ago. We're not getting enough crosses in. Lanzini's still getting up to speed. We're just not scoring goals at the moment. It comes that our assist yesterday came off Joe Hart. I'm sure you saw it. Sam Allardyce was too proud of that one. Long ball from Joe Hart. Bounces off a defender. We go around the goalkeeper and score our only goal. So, no, we're not getting enough crosses in, etc. If anything, actually, Masuaku, who we bought from Olympiacos for £6 million, is a better left winger than he is a left back. And actually, he seems to play a better role than Anatovic on the left wing than our record signing does. We need to get a lot more balls crossed into the box, because, you know, and we need to play our main striker, right? Chicharito, the fox in the box, as he showed, right? When he plays for Mexico, what did he do? The fox in the box scored one. He cleans up. You put him in the box, he will score. If you feed him, he will score. But we keep on having this, or the manager has this belief in this donkey of Andy Carroll, and we pay dearly for that belief
yesterday
in one choosing him ahead of Sacco, who had all the form, scored for Senegal in the international before the international break, had three goals this season, two in the League Cup, one in the league, and an assist. What's the boy got to do to get a start? And yet he starts with Andy Carroll. And then, anyway, don't get me on Andy Carroll. We need lots more balls in the boxes for West Ham, because we are shy of goals. I think we've got the finisher in Javier Hernandez. We just need a few more balls in the box for him to put some away.
Yeah, I think part of the issue is not the talent, just that when IU plays, he wants to score. I think, didn't he score like 15 plus his year at Swansea? You have Antonio who likes to score. You have Arnautovic who likes to score. And not a lot of them are creating. I know Tottenham struggled with that for a little bit when we brought in Chadley.
AU is another record signing before we signed the current record signing,
right,
who's been a bit of a flop.
Who replaced him? Gökhan Töre, who got hurt immediately. And who was the other winger you had last year from Valencia?
Fuguli.
Yeah, Sofyan Fuguli. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
So this is a long-standing issue.
You know, but you could say, you know, look what Zaza's done. Simone Zaza's gone off and scored like six goals and a hat-trick in 8 minutes. You could argue that Slaven Bilic is playing people out of position. He's playing AU out of his favoured position. He's playing Chicharito out of his favoured position. He's playing a number of the West Ham players, you know, and Antonio last season playing him as a right back.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's not a right back. So, you know, there's this undercurrent still, even though I said a minute ago, Slaven Bilic is not going to get the sack. We're running down his contract and we'll replace him in the summer. Everyone seems to know that, including the players. But he plays, it frustrates the hell out of me. He plays people out of position. And sometimes I think we pay the consequence of, you know, it not quite working. Slaven Bilic has said himself, if you've got the confidence, you can play anywhere, which seems a bizarre statement to say. I mean, well, then why doesn't Andy Carroll play in goal? If he's got the confidence, let's play him in goal. Let's play Joe Hart up front then, because this is all about confidence. You can play anywhere. Then that must be true.
Yeah, there have certainly been some strange choices by Bilic, but I will say during the presser before the Tottenham match, because obviously I had to watch that, he always comes across so intelligent. It really makes you wonder where some of these decisions are coming from. Is he just overthinking it, or?
I don't know. He's a very stubborn man, and he has an idea, and he will stick to it, and everyone can be shouting him, "You're wrong, you're wrong." The only time I've seen him change recently was, funny enough, at Swansea, where the crowd were baying, calling out for Lanzini, because we didn't look like we were going to win against Swansea, and we were baying for Lanzini, and literally he responded, I've never seen him do this, he responded within seconds and told Lanzini to strip down, and he was going on. And that's about the only time I've ever heard him swayed by a crowd opinion. He said last week, I'm not here to be popular. I don't mind the boo boys, because I do everything. Every decision I make is in the best interest of the club. I don't do anything deliberately just to anger fans. He said, sometimes my decisions will be unpopular.
Yeah.
Yes. You ain't kidding, Slav.
Anyway. Fair enough. Coming to you now, Thomas. Obviously the Sadio Mane injury is troubling again, although you did purposefully strengthen at the position by bringing in both Mohamed Salah and Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain to deal with his potential absence again. Still only 8 matches played for Liverpool this season. A lot of people before this match, before the United match, were trying to guess how Klopp was going to deal with this, if it was going to be Sturridge up front with Firmino out wide, Firmino up front, maybe just bring Oxlade-Chamberlain in as a like-for-like replacement. How do you envision your front 5 or 6 with the Mane injury? What do you think is the best way to address that?
Well, it's a tough question, because Mane was our best player at the start of the season, and it would be tough to cope without him, but we tried after the red card against Manchester City as well, and we didn't play as good without him. So hopefully Klopp will put Coutinho in the front three with Firmino in the middle and Salah on the other side, because I think we need better balance in the midfield, and we often play better when Coutinho is up at the front three, so we can keep Can and Henderson and Wijnaldum in the middle. But if Klopp really believes that Coutinho's best position is in the middle, we can't change him every time we have an injury. We need to play him in the position where Klopp thinks he's the best. So if Klopp thinks of Coutinho as a midfielder, we need him to play there. And if that's the case, maybe it's time for Oxlade-Chamberlain to play on the left side of Firmino, because the main issue here is that we don't change the position of Firmino, because he was great at the start of the season. But when we started to change his position, he hasn't shown anything at all. So we need him at his best now with Mane out. So I hope we play him in the middle for as long as it takes. Lallana is about a month away from getting back, so maybe that will suit us.
That'll definitely be interesting to keep an eye on. Henderson caught some flack over the international break for his performances for England. Just curious to think how you feel he's been playing for Liverpool thus far this season.
Yeah, I think he's been very inconsistent. He has made some good games, but a bit too many games where he hasn't gotten into the game at all. He has been running around searching for balls without getting him. So I think our midfield has been a big trouble for the back four. The back four is not as good as we wanted it to be. And without any cover from the midfielders, they are even more dangerous to have ahead of in front of Minolea. So I would like Henderson and Chan to step up and help our back four more, and maybe leave the offensive play to the players are best for it.
Yeah, do you think Henderson should be playing as a defensive midfielder, or just more as kind of a deep-lying playmaker?
He's the best option we have right now as a defensive midfielder. I think that is one of the positions we need to strengthen. We miss Lucas Leiva, and I didn't think that I would ever take that sentence in my mouth, but we do. He was maybe our only defensive midfielder last year. Can is not good enough to play there, and Henderson isn't at his best when he has to defend so much. So I hope that Klopp sees that as well.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see how that goes. Obviously, you have your easiest Champions League match coming up. Do you think that that's going to be a needed win after there's been a little pressure building on Klopp, it seems, of late?
Yeah, there is getting here in Sweden. We talk a lot about the pressure on Klopp. The Swedish supporters aren't very happy with him right now. So he needs to start winning. And the two games against Maribor is something that we need to get 6 points out of, because 2 points from the first two games in the Champions League isn't good enough. We played well, but we haven't scored. And as we often do, we've had some easy goals at the back. So we need to start winning if we want to get to the next round. And if we don't beat Maribor, we don't have in the next round to... We're not good enough to be in the next round if we don't beat them. So it's time for the players to step up and show that we're in Champions League to stay.
Yeah, hopefully Liverpool can represent England well in the Champions League, as the other teams seem to be doing thus far. Jake, today's match, something happened that you had been wanting to see. You wanted to see Marino paired with Shelvey. We hadn't really seen much of Lejeune yet, although obviously a problematic penalty, but he looked good outside of that. Is it seeming like we're finally landing on Newcastle's best 11 and that you'll just kind of roll with that going forward?
I'm not sure. I think there'll be a bit of rotation still. Rafa likes to rotate. And I think today was weird because Marino didn't actually start, which was odd. But the 11 players that did start were all at, I think they were all at the training ground during the international break, which I think is something that Rafa liked. It was Kieran Clark and Marino that were dropped, and they were both on international duty. So that's really interesting that happened, because it seems like he'd worked on a plan. But yeah, Marino signed on a permanent deal earlier this week, which is really good.
Yeah, you've been asking for it.
I think we got him for 6.5 million or something around that figure. And that is crazy for a player who's that good already. He's only just turned 21, a Spanish under 21 international, already bossing games in the Premier League for us. Already looks like our most talented player, probably up there with Shelvey. Those two are our best players. So really good that we got that one done. And I think he's definitely one that's going to, hopefully, I want Newcastle to grow with him. But if not, he's definitely going to be one that's going to be sold on for a massive amount of money in the future, because he is so, so talented. So that was really cool. But yeah, today we had Shelvey and Hayden, who played centre midfield, and Hayden got the goal, which was quite a nice goal from what I remember of it. I haven't seen the replay, but yeah, it was quite a nice strike. And he offers us something a little bit different. I think in all games, Rafa won't go for Shelvey and Shelvey and Marino, just because they're a little bit too offence minded, and Hayden does a lot of the running and sort of the dirty work that goes unseen. So I think that's why he played today, which was interesting. Why, yeah, Rafa played Marino and Shelvey against Liverpool, because you'd have thought Hayden would have been good for that game, but he paired those two together and it seemed to have worked there. So I think that's definitely going to be our first choice going forward, especially at home, because they're just so good on the ball. They're so intelligent. And like I was looking at, I'll just read a couple of our possession stats from the season, because they're really interesting to me, because I'm used to teams dominating, having less of the ball, but then, you know, taking the chance as well. But with Newcastle, mm-hmm. we seem to be creating more chances than the opposition, even with lower possession. Like today we had 38% possession and had 19 shots to Southampton's 12 against Swansea. We had 38% possession again, and we had 16 shots to their 10. Against Stoke, we had 42% possession. We had 14 shots to their 13. And against West Ham, we had 37% possession and 17 shots to their 8. So there's definitely a game plan there that we just don't want the ball. And I think the two games we lost, aside from Tottenham, were the games where we dominated possession against Brighton and Huddersfield. So it seems like if you give Newcastle the ball, we're not very good with it. But we're really good at winning it back high up the pitch and sort of nice incisive moves to get the shots in on goal. So I think if you sort of measured, you know, timed our possession from winning the ball to shot, it's really small. And I think that's why we can get some quite good opportunities, because we've got Shelvey and Marino who can pick out those passes. So yeah, it's really encouraging. And on Lejeune as well, it seems like it's in the DNA of any foreign defender coming into the Premier League, no matter how good they can be, is to just make it completely brainless, like foul in the penalty box to give away a penalty. I think it happens with all new defenders in the Premier League. I mean, that would have been a penalty anywhere, but he did so well that entire game. He was heading well. He was looks really good on the ball with some nice touches, you know, making the right decisions and sort of positioning. But it was just such a brainless tackle. Like, he was going away from goal near the byline. There's no need to make it. And it just seems like that was just in the DNA of just foreign defenders. They just come and do it. I think and if once he gets that out of his system, I think he won't be punished for it too much. I think Rafa's it said so much after the game. He said he played really well and it's just a mistake and that the team were getting better and stuff. So I think he looks really good and he's definitely going to improve us going forwards. But today, yeah, he did make an error that cost us 2 points.
The other thing I wanted to touch on with you about is Joselu, because he obviously scored in his first full match, which was against West Ham. Sorry, Sean. And continues to be in the top five in the league in shots on target. But when you watch him, he doesn't really seem like a natural finisher. Just curious to get your take on which side of that coin you think is a little more closer to the truth.
Yeah, I don't think he's a very good finisher. I think I was on the Anfield Index podcast after the Liverpool game, and we would just laugh. It was just the goal he scored in that was just ridiculous. Like, it just bounced off him. And
I didn't even think it was him.
He's going to score goals.
I thought it was tapped in by Matisse.
Yeah, but yeah, it was just bounced off him. And then the West Ham one as well, he just got past it and he literally just, he shot at goal, but it was going so slow. If it was just, he scored two terrible goals. He does a lot in, he makes us play better as a team, like, because he wins a lot of aerial balls. He's always hassling defenders, does a lot of running, a really good work rate. But he's just not a good finisher. He's been through on goal, I think, four or five times now and not scored, apart from the one against Liverpool, which was lucky more than judgment. So I think maybe he's going to score a lot more goals with his head. He's a bigger threat with his head. And I think Rafa won't mind him not scoring goals as long as the team is scoring and he's contributing to the overall play. I don't think it's a massive issue. But the problem we have with strikers is that Gale just, he doesn't look good at all. And I don't think it's a technical problem. I think he's more than good enough for the Premier League. There's been a lot of rumours about his mentality and he doesn't trust his hamstrings. And I saw that today. He wasn't committing to any runs. He was always feeling his hamstring. I think he's had so many hamstring injuries, he just expects it to go and he won't commit to runs. And that's a more dangerous place to be than being injured, because it's going to be tough to get over that. So I don't think Gale's going to be much use in the near future. The Mitrovic is the one that could come in, because I think he's a better player than Joselu. Overall, I think he's better technical. He's got more technical skill. He's still young. He can get a lot better. And he does a lot of what Joselu does when he's interested. And that's the big thing with Mitrovic. He hasn't come back since he got suspended after the West Ham game, which he played 20 minutes and scored. So, I mean, he played really well, but then just threw a stupid elbow, which is what he does. He's just an idiot and he's been punished for it. But I think he's the one striker we have currently in our squad that I think could go on and be a really good Premier League striker for us. I think he's got everything, but he's just an idiot. And the best example is Shelby. Like, he got punished for his red card. He's come back in and he looks really good now. Like, today he was really good against Liverpool. He was really good. I think if Mitrovic can learn from Shelby and come back in like that, I think he's going to be the one going forward that is going to be our first choice striker.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see if Mitrovic can win that job, because he is still a very highly regarded talent. It's just whether or not he can keep his head screwed on right. We'll be playing, of course, at the World Cup with Serbia having qualified. All right, now we're going to head into Player Watch, where this week we're going to be talking about a player who either positively or negatively has surprised you this season. For example, at Tottenham, mine is very much Moussa Sissoko, because instead of just being absolutely awful like he was last season, he's advanced all the way to an almost man this year, where in a lot of matches, because he was playing in the Premier League while Winks was still out, and has been largely playing while Dembele has been saved for the Champions League. So Sissoko has actually gotten some minutes, and he has been so close to making so many things happen. He's almost scored multiple goals. He's almost created multiple chances. He's almost just destroyed people in front of him, where he'll like completely make a fool of the player in front of him, but lose the ball and it'll just roll out to touch. But we're finally seeing signs, and whether or not he actually ends up converting any of those, we're at least kind of seeing it somewhat. He's been productive. He'll chase down players to make tackles. He's doing what we need him to do, which is carry the ball in between lines of the defense, which without Dembele, we don't really have a player that's willing to do that other than Dele Alli, but he plays much further forward than I think where we initially imagined he'd play when we signed him. But anyway, that's for me for Tottenham. Sean, at West Ham, is there anybody that's really surprised either positively or negatively?
Well, can I carry on with the Andy Carroll rant?
I would love for you to carry on with the Andy Carroll rant. For those that don't know, Andy Carroll got a red card yesterday.
Well, not only that, it's his fourth yellow of the season. Fourth yellow. How
so one more
is
he
season?
Has a suspension. This
I
is
mean,
match week
he
eight.
Was lucky... He was lucky not to. I mean, to be honest, a lot of people said that should be a straight red. Andy Carroll is just so ungraceful. When he jumps up, his arms flail around. I mean, we've had this before when he got sent off against Swansea a couple of years ago. You know, it's not deliberate. He's just such a tall oaf and ungraceful that when he jumps in the air and he's committed, his arms go everywhere and often the elbows end up in people's faces, but he deserved to go, and he changed the game.
Yeah, whether or not the elbow was intentional, he did sprint like 10 yards into him while that ball was in the air.
What does Andy Carroll done? The answer is he's given away two goals this season. He's cost us four yellow cards. Do you know what? Everybody's delighted. We're going, don't appeal it. Whatever you do, we're so excited not to have Andy Carroll. It's almost like Slav has to pick. Andy Carroll's got some dirt on Slaven Bilic. It's either a compromising picture, it's at about an alleged affair or something. He's got some dirt on Slaven Bilic that says he's that you must play me. Now, on Friday when we play Brighton, he cannot pick Andy Carroll. So he has to have a plan B. And I, for one, are really excited to watch Sacco and Chicharito play alongside each other. So, you know, I think Chicharito's been getting a bad beef. And, you know, to get those two to play together will be great. And Lanzini's getting fit all the time. My player to watch, you know, and he's really coming in good, is Joe Hart. And the player to watch, I'm going to give almost my man of the match, is Joe Hart. I think he made some really crucial saves for us. Even a cheek, and you know when the luck's with you. See the where it came off the back of the post, hit him on the back. And how many times have we seen that? That then it goes from his back and back into the goal. Did you see that when it sort of spun around?
But he turned around and just grabbed it.
So I think, you know, although we're paying him something like 130 grand a week, I think he's showing his class. He's a really good keeper. He came out, he punched a few. And how many goalkeepers did you have him on your dream team? I hope he got an awarded an assist. Can goalkeepers get assists?
I don't know. I will check on it during Thomas's support.
So my hero is Joe Hart, and my absolute villain is Andy Carroll. And he's got the cheek to come out a few days ago pushing for a place in England. How dare he? How dare he? If he wants to go to Russia, I say no. Sort out your own game first. Sort out your game. Oh, one last thing I'm going to say.
Okay.
He actually did an interview this week where he said, and I quote, my game is not all about goals. I'm going to repeat that. As a striker, my game is not all about goals. Well, thank God for that, because you haven't scored any.
It's very convenient.
Dear. We better move on, otherwise I could go on all night.
Fair enough.
Mr. Carroll.
To wrap this up, Joe Hart was indeed awarded an assist for the goal in the official Premier League fantasy game. It's fantastic. Thomas, Liverpool kind of up and down thus far. Has there been a player that's impressed you?
Yeah, as you say, there have been a lot of ups and downs. So it's hard to find a player that's been very consistent during this season. But I have to say that I've been a bit impressed by Alberto Moreno. And that is also something that I never thought I would say. But he almost looks like a defender right now, because he has always been okay going forward. He's quick. And that's what you want from a modern left back. But now we can defend as well. Maybe it's because the other three in our back four looks worse. But I think he's been quite good this season. He's starting to play more with his brain than he has done before, where he almost just looked like a running around. But now he thinks more when he plays, and we need that. I was hoping to see Andy Robertson more at the start of this season, and I was quite sure that Moreno would leave. But right now, it's hard to take him out of the team. There are a lot of players who have been showing worse signs. So I think Alberto Moreno is the one who has shown most this season so far. I expect a lot more from the other players. And the player that has disappointed me the most, I have to say, is Daniel Sturridge, because now he's rested during most of the games and he doesn't have to play as much as he used to. So I thought that he would be great coming off the bench and be dangerous at the end of the games. But every time he's on the pitch, it's like we're getting worse. If we take off Coutinho and get him on the pitch, nothing happens. And that's not what I wanted to see from him. I wanted him to score and give us the late points. But I don't think we have scored in the second half for many games now. And the last 20, 30 minutes, it's like we stopped playing. So that's not what I wanted from him this season.
Yeah, and it seemed like this would be the perfect time to get him on. With Mane out, it opened up one of those spaces, certainly not staking a very strong claim for it. Jake, obviously you're up in the Premier League, so there's naturally going to be changes. Like Dwight Gayle obviously tore up the Championship last year, not so much the Premier League this year, but any surprises kind of aside from the natural jump from the Championship to the Premier League?
Yeah, I've got a couple. Yeah, like you said, Gayle. I mentioned earlier, I think it's a mental thing more than a technical thing. He's more than good enough for the Premier League. When I saw him last season, his touch and his the way he moves, he's so talented. He's just, yeah, it's just not worked out, and I don't think he's going to be here in a few months, which is a shame. But I'm sure we'll move on from that. But yeah, the player that's really surprised me the most, I'd say, is Javi Manquillo, who has joined the Rafa Benitez school for defenders and graduated with flying colours like Kieran Clark did last season. But we bought and DeAndre Yedlin as well. We just sign these players who we get told when we sign them from other clubs that they're terrible, they can't defend, they're awful, and then they come in and do an absolutely fine job, and it's almost like they were playing in a team with bad coaching and bad and just in bad teams rather than them being bad. Happened with Kieran Clark last year, who's been one of our best defenders since. DeAndre Yedlin's come on leaps and bounds, and Javi Manquillo, who came off to with our neighbour Sunderland. They were telling us that he was awful and that he couldn't defend, and now he's absolutely fine. He looks really good. Is rarely in the wrong position. It's just good going forward. Contributes there. Really good, you know, in the right position all the time. And he's just learning from Rafa. And I think that's the main thing. He played for Atletico Madrid and Liverpool. Like, he can't be bad. Still, I think he's 24. And I think we probably got him for like 2 or 3 million, which just looks a bargain now, because he's an easily a Premier League quality fullback. So he's been the one that's really impressed me. And I think he's going to keep improving. The one that's disappointed, yeah, but aside from Gayle, it's tough. I think probably, although it's harsh to say, I think Rob Elliott has. He's just not very good.
Just letting a few goals where you're like,
yeah, he's just not very good. I think I can see why we wanted to get a new goalie in the summer. We didn't get one, which is a shame. I think maybe we might get one in January if there's one on offer. I'd even go as far to say I'd rather see Cole Darlow be playing instead of him. Or we've got the goalkeeper who played in the under 20 team at the under 20 World Cup, was it, that England won. I think he's their goalie. Made a penalty save in the final. Freddie Woodman, really highly rated. I think he's been scouted by Tottenham, Arsenal, the usual suspects have all been looking at him, and he's yet to get a first team game for Newcastle. It's difficult with goalies. You don't really want to put them in when they're 20, 21, but there's a lot of fans that are, you know, sort of wanting him to get a go, which I wouldn't be against in a cup competition, but we got knocked out of that really early, so that didn't happen. But yeah, I think goal is just it's just a weak position. I think the first goal today, I haven't seen it back, but I think he probably could have done better with that. And when the penalty was awarded, I had no faith in him saving that. I just think he's fine. He's just not very good. He's probably one of the worst keepers in the league. But yeah, I mean, we can only get better in that position. So yeah, we can't get worse.
All right, I just realized that I should also name drop Ben Davis. I didn't think of him because he also did well last year. People just didn't realize it. But obviously, Ben Davis has been very good for us this season as well, making me think Danny Rose doesn't automatically get his spot back in Tottenham's 11 when he's fully fit back in training. Now, All right, we will wrap up with match previews. We'll lead in with Thomas. Of course, we name-dropped it earlier. Maribor versus Liverpool. How strong a team do you think we're going to see rolled out for this one?
Well, we need to win this game, so I think we'll play the best team we have. The best fit team. We played early on Saturday, and I think we play Spurs late on Sunday, so there are no need to rest players. Karius will play in goal, of course, as he has done in all the previous Champions League games. But apart from that, I think it will be almost the same team as against Manchester United. So it will be a strong team, and we absolutely need to win this game. If we lose or draw, we'll have a really tough game going forward against Spurs on Sunday, and we need to get some wins to get the team going. Been a lot of draws lately, and we need to win and to score to get the players to have some self-confidence again. So hopefully we can score a couple of goals against them and get 3 points from Slovenia.
Yeah, fortunately for you, Tottenham's record after Champions League matches or Europa League matches over that long run, not super great, including the draw with Burnley where we were winning, like in Sean's West Ham scenario, we were winning, I think it was the 88th minute before letting Chris Wood score against us on his debut. Tottenham will play midweek in the Champions League, obviously, hence that statistic there. We're playing...
Where will people turn up? You know, will you actually sell all your tickets in Wembley Stadium?
I mean, was 90,000 not enough for you?
Well, when we're playing. I bought a ticket to go to the League Cup, mm-hmm. but Spurs, much to the disgust of the West Ham ball, because I spoke to them about this, only decided not to open the upper tier. So there's only 50,000 to sell. We only got given 4,800, which we sold out in minutes.
Yep.
And we could have sold four or five times that. Guess what? Spurs, for the West Ham game, it's gone on general sale. You've got 45,000 season ticket holders, didn't buy it. You've got about 40,000 members, didn't buy it. You've got 4,000 on the waiting list, apparently, didn't buy it. General sale, guess what? Still hasn't sold out.
Yeah, well, I'd imagine they'd show up if they were playing a bigger club. But for the match against Real Madrid that we're playing on Tuesday, I would imagine we'll open the upper tier for that.
That stadium's too big for you.
Listen, it was better than MK Dons. That was the other stadium option, so not too bothered by it, to be honest. Good news for us in this match against Real Madrid. They are heavily injured. No Gareth Bale, no Danny Carvajal, no Mateo Kovacic. Marcelo's a maybe. Benzema seems to be back. And now we're hearing that Sergio Ramos has the stomach flu and Keylor Navas has an adductor muscle injury. So if there was ever a time to beat Real Madrid, it would be now. Will we do it?
No.
Probably not. But if we can get a point from either Real Madrid match, basically we go through, because then it's just us versus Dortmund on goal difference, and we've already put +2 to the good in that category against them. Again, much like Thomas was saying, we will roll out our best 11 here. It doesn't sound like Ben Davis will be fit in time, which is obviously a blow. We'll throw up into the air how we're going to line up. Obviously, we played Kieran Trippier in the Premier League to play Serge Aurier in the Champions League, who you would much rather have on Ronaldo, because the idea of Trippier trying to cover Ronaldo was already giving me night terrors. It is probably disappointing. I think Bale versus Davis would have been really interesting from the Welsh perspective. Obviously, that's both of them not going to be playing in this match. If Kane can score, I think we'll take that as a win and just move on. Obviously, this one is in Spain, but he's already pushing for the top score in the Champions League. And so if he could hold that at least through December, when hopefully we'll make our way through the group, that would be terrific.
Oh, so this one's away, is it?
It is, yeah. Yeah, right. So he'll actually score.
Fill the stadium for you, don't worry.
for us, Dele Alli is going to be the biggest miss. This is the last match of his suspension. He'll be back for the reverse leg against Real Madrid, which is just the following week. But you can expect Heung-min Son to play in this one. Whether or not it'll be Sissoko or Winks in midfield, we'll see. Neither one's particularly inspiring for a Champions League run, although worth noting, that when we beat Inter Milan, our midfield consisted of Jermaine Genus and Tom Huddleston. So we've been through this before. Hopefully we can come out of this one relatively unscathed. I think a draw, the best we can hope for, but not super optimistic about it. You already, Sean, mentioned the Brighton match that's going to be coming on a short shift, coming for you on Friday. Excited yep. about a night under the lights?
Yeah, I think it's always a bit good, and it's starting to feel a bit special now under those lights. I mean, West Ham and Brighton are one of five teams all on 8 points after playing eight. They always say if you average 1 point a game, you should be safe from relegation. We're hoping to do a bit better than that. But yeah, I mean, they obviously played Everton, which are one, you know, West Ham are 15th, Brighton are 14th, Everton are 16th. That was a 1-1 draw yesterday. So, or was it today? I can't remember. So very evenly matched. We've had a very similar season, as I say, played eight points. They've got -4. We've got -6. It will be a very interesting game. I'm hoping we can win it without Andy Carroll. and do you know what? And this is the crazy thing. So five teams on 8 points, another three, Huddersfield, West Brom and Southampton on 9 points. If we win on Friday, we automatically go into 10th place. We jump up 5 places. So, as I said earlier, a bit crazy in the early parts of the season, and we could well do with jumping up a win under our belt against Brighton, under the lights, in the London Stadium, without Andy Carroll.
So, predicting a win then?
Yeah, I'm predicting a win.
Yeah, go on. we'll wrap up with Jake. You're playing Crystal Palace. The first time this season, it seemed to be a bad time to play them.
I'd say it's a good time to play them. I'm very happy they've got that win and the goal, because that definitely would have happened against Newcastle if they hadn't done it. So I'm glad that's gone. That cannot happen. If they do it, then it's not quite as embarrassing. But no, we're really good now. I think we're a really good football team. Like, we've had the last three games at St James Park, we beat West Ham, we beat Stoke, and then we drew to Liverpool, and I think we looked absolutely good. We looked really good in the first two, and we looked absolutely fine against Liverpool. So I think at home we're going to be fine this year. I think we'll beat Palace. I think it could be a bit. They might think they're on a high. It might be a bit after, you know, the day after the Lawmare show. They might just not turn up. That often happens after a big win. And I'm still not convinced by them. I think
you're not buying it on the Zaha as a striker project.
Yeah, no. No, I'm not buying it. I think Hodgson is probably not going to last that long either. So yeah, I'm confident. I think we're good right now. We're just consistent. We deliver the same performance every week, and Crystal Palace probably do not. So yeah, I think we'll win. I think we'll get back to winning ways. We haven't won in three, although we have drawn two of those. So I think yeah, we'll win. We'll get a nice home win to climb up even higher than ninth, which would be great.
All right, that'll do it for us today. So if you'd like to tell everybody where they could reach you or any projects you're working on, now would be a good time.
Hi, I've been Sean Weston. You can find me on Twitter at West Ham Football. I also am a presenter on a West Ham podcast called More Than Just a Podcast, and that's more as in Bobby Moore with two O's. I write for two websites. One of them's called westhamtillidie.com, where I have a Sunday column. And the other one is called clarenthugh.info, which is a West Ham daily news website. Thanks for listening.
And I've been Thomas Nygren. I also have a Twitter, but I tweet in Swedish, so I'm not sure if too many of you will understand, but you can find me at Thomas Nygren. And I also write for www.lfcsv.se. And we have a quite new podcast called the Total Liverpool Podcast. And everything is in Swedish, but we have a few. You can watch the images on the site and maybe try to learn a new language, but give it a listen.
And Google Translate is always your friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could get my Twitter at Jake Jackman with two N's. I will not be tweeting in any other languages because I'm English and we are just really bad at that. But yeah, I write for EPL Index and The Boot Room, so check both those out. And also give a shout out to James on the Championship show. I think he interviewed Colin Murray earlier in the week, and that was a really good listen, and they cover some Liverpool stuff as well, so definitely give that one a listen.
Yeah, and we'll continue to push that out through both EPL Index and EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find me on Twitter at Kevroff. I tweet in American English. you can find my writings over at goal.com under the gaming tab. It's all fantasy stuff over there. And also I host the FPL Roundtable, which is the fantasy show on this channel, and also do DFS content, which is daily fantasy for those that don't know, for both VIP Bet and for Fantrax and Fantrax Radio, which you can find at Fantrax and at Fantrax Radio. All right, that will do it for us. Thank you guys so much for coming on. It was a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.